very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host Matt Barros. Barros, how you doing today? What do we got cooking with the 49ers?
Just fresh off the local pro day, which, and I apologize for being so mean, but it may be the least talented pro day I've ever covered. And I've been covering these pro days for about two decades now. I didn't go to a single one. I was going to go to the Stanford one, and then they said, well, we're only going to have one player working out, and it was the kicker. And I thought, which team is not going to draft a kicker this year? So I didn't go to any of them, and the talent at the local pro day, there was maybe one or two draftable guys, and we're talking late seventh type of guys. Ron Stone's son, who played, who's sort of an edge guy, defensive end at Washington State. He was one of the guys that stood out and probably, is capable of being drafted late on day three, but pretty slim pickings at the local pro day.
This is why the Pac-12 broke up, but that's a whole other conversation. All right, Barrow, so anything to be gleaned? Like, you saw the 49ers staffers walking around? At least there's some kind of information that you could pick up from what you saw yesterday?
Yeah, well, I mean, all of the new guys, we're talking about the assistants, and Kyle Shanahan still has yet to give the titles out and kind of announce. I mean, they haven't even announced that Brandon Staley's been hired at this point. But he was out there, obviously. Nick Sorensen was out there. KJ Wright, he's going to be an assistant linebackers coach. He's going to work with Johnny Holland. He was very active, sort of running routes like a tight end so that the rookie linebackers could learn coverage and things like that. So I think he's going to be very prominent at 49ers practices this year. They still don't have an assistant defensive line coach. Remember Daryl Tapp. He was very prominent, very kind of Chris Kasurk-like in recent practices. He's the new defensive line coach in Washington. So I think that's the reason why Shanahan hasn't kind of made it all official yet. He still has one hire left to go. And it was hard to tell, Staley was kind of hanging around the defensive backs. Like I said, it wasn't a formal practice, so it was hard to say. One thing I was trying to figure out, it looked like Brian Griese is still working with the QBs. Clint Kubiak is now in New Orleans. He was the passing game coordinator last year, so that kind of raised the question, how does Shanahan reshuffle that offensive staff? So they still have Clay Kubiak. He still seems to be the assistant QB's coach, which would make Mick Lombardi the new Clint Kubiak, if you can follow all the Kubiaks around. So what I'm
sure
saying
I can't.
Is that,
keep going. Yeah.
Mick Lombardi would be the passing game coordinator. I think that's how it's going to turn out. Again, we're still waiting on Shanahan to make these decisions.
So Mick Lombardi replaces Clint Kubiak. Clay, yes. Kubiak remains Clay Kubiak.
Yeah, Clay and Greasy remain themselves.
Okay, wow, that's a remarkable. That's a news right there. They're still themselves. okay, you put your mock draft out, I think, 2 weeks ago. We skipped last week. I hope you're feeling really rested up podcast, yes. Right? So we did not, yeah, do 49ers Plus Minus. You're roaring to go now. We're just going to bowl right through the draft. You have Amarius Mims, the offensive tackle, Gordon, moving 49ers, moving up 10 spots to get Amarius Mims from Austin, offensive tackle from Georgia. I full signed off on that. I think that looks like a route to go. There's tackles to get. You might as well try to move up a bit. They've got some extra picks in the third and fourth. Go move up, get the guy you want, and don't just sit back and, at 31 and just take who comes to them. Are you changing your mind at all on that? You got any different kind of vibes on what they might do with the first round pick?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was done under the premise that in a rare deep draft for offensive tackle, you take advantage of that and get a starter caliber offensive tackle, somebody who could come in the future, probably not right away, but somebody in the pipeline who could take over for Trent Williams at some point. I mean, finding a 10-year offensive tackle, you normally need to have a top 10 draft pick to do that. The scenario that I put forth allows the 49ers to do that at the end of the draft. Now, having said that, I still have yet to see any of these offensive tackle guys be linked to a visit to the 49ers, an official 30 visit. For example, Tyler Guyton is another guy that you and I have been talking about for months now, Oklahoma tackle, another guy who not a lot of experience in college, but has the frame, the framework to become good, become a left tackle starter. He's not coming. And so I would imagine that if you're talking about guys who are inexperienced like Mims and Guyton, and if the 49ers were interested in them, they absolutely would have them on an official visit to Santa Clara. And those visits occur next week. And we may learn more about it next week. But to this point, it doesn't seem like those guys are coming. And if that's the case, I don't think that they're going to take an offensive tackle at 31, which is going to leave a lot of 49ers fans disgruntled. I mean, they're already a little bit disgruntled. This is going to disgruntle them even more.
You just sent a chill throughout the 49ers populace, Barrows. You sent a little, I'm a little surprised you're saying that. I get the logic of it. I mean, I'll throw devil's advocate. Couldn't they have met with somebody off camp, after their pro day, that
Absolutely.
Kind of thing? I guess the coaches weren't at the combine, but there could be something. Like, you know what? Let's not tip our hand here. Let's have a little pride. And I think they've done that once or twice, right, with some of their top picks where they're not tipping their
Mike
hand.
Mike McGlinchey, yeah.
And they have a media. It is an official 30. I'm not sure if Ayuk was one of those. They're like one of those guys. They've done that before. I don't know why it would be so necessary. But those tackles are interesting. Like the ordering of these tackles and where, if teams move around to get them is going to be very interesting. Let's say you really like somebody, like you really, really want to move up and you don't want to say, okay, listen, let's not tip some other team from moving up ahead of us. That would be my counter to that, just because I think the need is so big. They're not going to be able to get a tackle another way. This is the year to do it. They've got the extra picks. They're trying to win a Super Bowl. It would be a weird thing to do if they pass on a tackle, unless Barrows, they got some other way. We didn't know they were maneuvering for Trent Williams, right? I mean, we knew there was an interest, but we didn't know they were going to do it like that. We didn't for sure know that Staley was going to retire. Maybe they got some other way to get a tackle. I don't know what that would be. I'm suggesting maybe there's a trade, theoretically, but I don't feel that. Do you feel anything like they're going to take care of this position in another way?
Well, let me go back to the Mike McGlinchey year. That was a rare example of a guy not coming in for an official 30 visit. Remember, that was the one where McGlinchey came in at the combine and just blew everybody away. Yep. And you're right. John Lynch said afterwards that, we had such a great meeting with this guy that we didn't want to tip anybody off about him and bring him in on an official 30 visit. The counter to that is that was back when Shanahan and the coaching staff used to actually go to the combine. They didn't go this year. So it would have been Lynch and Tariq Ahmad and some of these other guys meeting with Amarius Mims and Tyler Guyton. But no Shanahan and no Chris Foerster. And again, I just think that when you're talking about guys, McGlinchey was a senior. I think he was, or at least he had, been a longtime starter at Notre Dame. These guys that I'm just talking about, Mims and Guyton, aren't. I mean, Mims has started 8 games at Georgia, and Guyton's only a little bit more than that. So when there are question marks, when the guys are young, I would imagine you want to bring them out and learn as much as you can if you are fixing to make a big move like they are. The other explanation is that it is a deep draft for offensive tackles. And it might be that they think that you know, second round, third round, there are going to be some guys that that we like. You know, the beauty of the first round, though, is that you have 5 years, you know, a five-year contract for those picks. So if you got a Mims and he's not quite ready in year one, he learns in year one. He apprentices under Trent Williams, and then he's ready to go, and you have him for another 4 years after that. You get a guy in the third round, and, you know, if he's not ready, then all of a sudden you don't have that many years with that guy. So I don't know. 49ers are very picky when it comes to offensive tackles. I'd love to know what they're thinking about this class. And they are bringing some offensive tackles in. Again, they're guys, you know, third, fourth, fifth round type of guys.
So other than tackles, what would the names that you've heard lead you to believe they might do in the first round?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen a single guy who's kind of linked to end of the first round. One guy, Marshawn Kneeland, he's a defensive end. Surprise.
Shocking.
From Western Michigan. I would think that 31 is too early for him. He might be a guy that if another team wants to come back and get a quarterback at the end of the first round and, you know, you get an early second round pick and some other things for him, that would be a good spot for Marshawn Kneeland. I would think that wide receiver and cornerback would be other positions to take at 31 if you are not taking an offensive tackle. It's an incredibly deep draft at wide receiver. It's a good draft at cornerback, too. Kool-Aid McKinstry would be there. The Iowa kid could be there. Probably not, but there would be some good cornerbacks to take. You've got Charvarius Ward. He's on the last year of his contract. D'Amador Lenore is on the last year of his contract. You don't have a clear-cut nickelback. That might be the smart position to take at 31.
That would be the least consequential, I think, which I wouldn't understand, but they take a defensive end, 49er fans, you're taking another defensive lineman. How many defensive linemen can you possibly take? They take a wide receiver, Barros. We know what that would cause. We know what that might mean. All right, I'm just going to say it. Like a couple years ago, this is when Deebo Samuel's trade request came, right about now, maybe like a week out of the draft. So we're not quite there. But just to write about here, this is when it happened. And there were definitely, you know, rumblings that something like that could happen. I think we had already heard by now that there had been an awkward kind of confrontational conversation at some point between his reps and the 49ers. We haven't heard that. I mean, with Ayuk, there's been social media stuff, but I'll just say if we don't hear anything by next week, I don't think they're trading him at the draft. And if they're not trading him at the draft, they're not going to trade him. They're not one of those guys trade him in training camp. They're not that kind of team, which is the wise way to do it. If you're going to trade him, get the pick now. Like, get the pick right now. Get when you know the number and when you know the player you can get. Are you feeling any like embers heating up there on the Ayuk negotiation? Potential problem, potential trade, potential, you know, coming together. We're about that time. I think this is what I think fans should understand. This is when it gets decided for smart teams. It gets decided right before the draft and then draft night. And then once the Deebo Samuel thing passed and he was not traded on the draft, they were going to re-sign him. Like, they had pretty much decided they were going to re-sign him. Where do you think the 49ers are with Ayuk at this pretty pivotal moment?
Yeah, I think it's very similar to the Deebo Samuel situation. I mean, they are going to have to get blown away by an offer. It's going to have to include a one and then, you know, nothing in return. I mean, you get Ayuk in return. You don't get Ayuk and a two and things like that. And I just don't think that offer is going to be on the table. I just mentioned how deep this draft is at wide receiver. So, you know, a team that's is interested in Ayuk is probably thinking, okay, I can get a really good rookie wide receiver and get him on a rookie deal for 4 or 5 years instead of trading for him. So, I don't think anything happens. I think the 49ers absolutely will keep their lines open. That's their MO. They always do. They did for Deebo Samuel. Offers came in for Deebo Samuel. Nothing that moved the needle. The 49ers were decidedly unimpressed with the offers for Samuel. And, you know, Samuel, frankly, was coming off a better season at that time than Ayuk. Ayuk had a great season this last year. Samuels was better back in 21, and the offers still weren't enough to move the needle for San Francisco. I do think, though, early on, I mean, you can tell by who's coming in. Malachi Corley, some other wide receivers that are going to be taken on day two. The 49ers are going to draft a receiver, and they're probably going to draft a receiver early on. And there's going to be all sorts of instant analysis, probably by you and me, when this happens, about what that means for Ayuk, what it means for Deebo Samuel. You know, the bottom line is that as it stands right now, neither Brandon Ayuk nor Juwan Jennings is signed long term. Deebo Samuel has an escape clause or an escape hatch in his contract for the 49ers, and they don't have anybody good in the pipeline. So I think that restocking the wide receiver room in this day and age for a head coach who loves wide receivers and for a quarterback who's about to get a huge contract, and you want to make that that investment pay off with a lot of good weapons around him, I think that wide receiver absolutely is something that the 49ers are going to draft and draft early and maybe draft twice in this upcoming draft.
Okay, I said it somewhere, but I'll say that I told you this when I was asking somebody around the league about could the 49ers really trade Ayuk, and the response I got was around the league, not someone who's involved with this, just someone maybe playing a little devil's advocate to me, but the person asked me, like, what about the other receiver? The implication is could, you know, maybe they could think about trading Deebo. I've written that out just because the contractual, they trade him away, the cap hit, they're basically paying as much for him to leave, not dollars, but on the cap, as they would to have him on the team. The cap hit would be about the same. So why would they do that? Barros, could you see them though moving Deebo? Like, I don't think they'd get a lot for him either, by the way. So where are you on that? Like, draft a receiver and move Deebo? Is that at all on the table?
I don't think so. I mean, they're bringing in a guy named Malachi Corley, yep, who played at Western Kentucky and is a carbon copy of Deebo, but really similar to Deebo, probably the most similar to Deebo that we've seen since Deebo. I mean, a guy who you get the ball in his hands, he breaks tackles, and he likes contact. They're bringing him in. He could be taken, you know, second, third round. But if they brought him in, I think it's a Deebo replacement for 2025. And I think that's what we're talking about here. There's a way for the 49ers to get out of Samuel's contract more efficiently, mm-hmm, next season than this season. So I think that is the plan. And you and I have talked about this. I think that Ayuk is really a great fit for Kyle Shanahan and for Brock Purdy. And that the 49ers feel like they could bring in somebody like a Malachi Corley, and he could duplicate the things that Deebo Samuel gives this team more quickly than you could bringing in somebody to be a Brandon Ayuk. That took years of development. I think that's the philosophy that the 49ers are going to take. Now, there are some very, they're very Brandon Ayuk-like receivers in this draft too. Adonai Mitchell from Texas, he's a guy that could be there at 31. He's very similar to Ayuk. I know that if the 49ers drafted him, people would think, oh, they're trading Ayuk, they just brought in the new Ayuk. It wouldn't hurt to have two Ayuk-like guys in your wide receiver core, the way that the 49ers run, the way that Purdy has built chemistry with Ayuk. If you had two Ayuks, boy, I think that would make a lot of people in this offense happy.
Two Ayuks is better than two Deebos. And not trying to say, you know, one's more valuable than the other, but just the stuff, like I've said, Ayuk does receiver stuff. He runs routes. He blocks. you can always use more of that. Debo, you can't have two gadget guys, right? Two gadget guys, are, and Christian McCaffrey is another sort of player like that. You run the – their value is to have one of them, you know, maybe two of them, but not three of them. And so, yeah, I think if you've got Corley as your mock second pick, second round pick at 63. I think, yeah, I can see that as the Debo replacement in a year. Although Debo might see that too and not love it, right? I mean, there's some emotions in this. I'm surprised there hasn't been some reaction to Debo that with people like me who are speculating that he may not be on this team much longer, that he might react to that. Like someone would tell him, oh my God, these people are saying you're out. What do you think? You know, it's Debo does do media stuff, not so much with Bay Area media, but he does do it with a certain person nationally. And I'm surprised it hasn't come up a little bit, but maybe it'll come up again. We'll see. We know the 49ers are looking at this stuff pretty coldly, right? Eric Armstead is about as important a guy in the locker room as anybody. The longest tenured 49er, certainly the longest good player for, you know, way longer than everyone else there who's been good. And they cut him and he didn't like it. And, you know, I'm sure there's some reverberations in there. There are other people who've got to be thinking it might be them in a year. It might be them in 2 years. What do you think the reverberations are of the arm? I mean, we talked about this a little bit, but just within that group, does it change some of the way the players think about the team? Does it change anything about just kind of the mentality of the locker room as they move forward?
If the 49ers drafted Malachi Corley, it would be so on the nose that you couldn't avoid. You just drafted Debo Samuel 2.0. So they would get all sorts of questions about it. I don't know how they would sort of get out from underneath it. But I mean, my sense is that these guys know. They have a sense that that's coming. Remember on locker cleanout day, IU said he wasn't sure whether he was going to be around. Like he didn't know whether he was going to get traded or not. So, you know, they're surrounded by businessmen, they're agents. They all know these things. They all know how these contracts are written. They wrote them. So I think that none of this would be a surprise. Like we've discussed this in the past. I think that this season, the atmosphere is going to be very serious. It's going to be very, I mean, almost tense. Like this team has a job to do. It's like the 2013 season under Jim Harbaugh, where they had gone to the Super Bowl the previous year. They realized the age of the team. They realized, okay, this is it. I mean, this is our last best chance to win a Super Bowl. And once they went to Seattle and lost that game, boy, everything just started to fall apart after it. So I think that this team is going to be, you know, composed of different people, different personalities. It won't be quite as fraught as 2013, but I think that that onus, that that idea, that responsibility, that pressure that that the 49ers felt in 2013, I think it's going to be similar to this season.
I think it makes it even more important you got to hit this pick because they haven't had a first round pick in 3 years. Let's count Trey Lance, but that did not work out. Because of that trade did not work out, you haven't had first round picks for his 2 years. It's 31, but it's still a pretty good spot. And if you're going to continue this, right, Brock Purdy and unknown, you know, Nick Bosa and then unknown others into the next 5 years, Fred Warner probably. Beyond that, who knows? You need to hit this pick. You need to either you move up to get somebody, you stay back at 31 if you're going to trade it, which I don't think they're going to do, but if you do, you got to take advantage of it. They need some young talent. Like they need guys who are going to be the next guys for the next 7 years. Because they don't, like, who is it? Barris, I just named him. I think it's Bosa, Purdy. If they keep Ayuk, that would be Ayuk. He's 26. Who else do they have in that under 27 thing that are going to for sure start? It's Fred Warner, but not as long as, you know, Purdy and potentially Bosa are going to be around. They need to get some of those guys. And they don't have guys who haven't played yet who are going to be those guys, right? There's nobody, Jake Moody. I mean, I don't know. I can't try to think of who else would qualify as the banner carriers once this big era is over. Once Kittle, you know, Juszczyk, Trent Williams, that group, whenever. It's not all going to be at the same time, but once that group isn't at their peak. They got to get some other guys who are going to be those guys.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, I think you just named the core that they're going to move forward with. Let's just say it's in kind of five-year chunks. Yeah, a lot of the names that people know and love right now are not going to be on this team at the end of that next five-year chunk. So, I mean, I think it's all about Brock Purdy. You're about to commit to Brock Purdy for a lot of money, and you have to make that work. So, I mean, that's why I keep saying wide receiver. I think that skill positions are going to be critical. I mean, you can make the same argument about offensive tackle. And I do think, I mean, like we said, I mean, my last mock had them taking an offensive tackle. I think it makes a lot of sense to nail that down right now so that in that 5-year period moving forward, you have a tackle at the ready, and you're protecting Brock Purdy. But boy, I just haven't seen any tackles coming through Santa Clara. But yeah, so I think it's about finding guys that will make Purdy look better and play better. And that's going to be the key to this draft.
I like the tackle because then you could kick McKivitz into right guard and you're fixing two spots. I've said this a million times. I just think it makes so much sense to do it. Knowing these 49ers, like the Trent Williams thing, the McCaffrey trade, like they do like making these trades. I'm trying to scan for possible like tradable tackles. You know, it's not Tunsil anymore because Texans are great, are going to be very good, possibly an AFC championship kind of level roster after trading for Stephon Diggs. They've got the young quarterback. You're not trading a tackle. Like the other one, Tristan Wirfs. I mean, I mean, the bidding for him would be immense. Like he's still young. He just moved to left tackle. He's an all pro talent. Could they get a tackle? I mean, like, do you have any name on your mind? Like if they're going to do something dramatic, they could do this at tackle. I can't think of anybody other than Wirfs, and Wirfs would just, I can't see them getting him either. So is that an avenue they could explore? Is that anything you've thought about?
It's not anything that I've thought about. I mean, it felt like the Trent Williams one was, you know, pulling a rabbit out of a hat. I mean, you can't expect to do that. But maybe you're right. Maybe that is the explanation. There does seem to be, a discouragement that the 49ers have about young tackles, that just the amount of work it takes to kind of bring somebody in and get somebody ready to play in the NFL. Mike McGlinchey is the last rookie that they drafted who started a full season as a rookie. And that was back in 2018. And I know that Spencer Burford did that a little bit. I think he missed one game in 22, but he was also rotating in and out with Daniel Brunskill that year. So, I mean, remember they had the three picks in the third round last year, and there were a bunch of tackles. And we all speculated that, one of those three picks could be a tackle, like Blake Freeland. I remember from BYU, big, tall guy, needed time, but could really move, had a good frame, et cetera, et cetera. They didn't bring him in. They didn't take a tackle. They didn't look at tackles. That was not something that they seemed to be too interested in that year. And I'm getting the same vibe this year. And maybe they just think that Amarius Mims and Tyler Guyton are just not going to be available. You know, they're going to go in the teens. We can't get up that high. Let's not waste our time and bring these guys in. That could be it as well. But you just don't see a lot of tackle work being done by this team heading into the draft.
That sounds pretty interesting to me, Barrow. So that was it's good fodder. It's good something. You make me think, and it's good when Barrows does that. I'm like, what does this mean? What are they going to do? But like, if they're going to have a trade, wouldn't they be like exploring tackles just as to make sure people don't think they have a trade? I don't know. Like, I try to outthink these guys sometimes. It's hard.
Well, I mean, and I only have 13 names of guys who are coming in right now, and there are 30. And all of these occur next week. So it could expand. But I do know that some of those guys are not coming. And they are looking at some tackles. Let me read off the list here. Caden Wallace is a guy who's coming in. That's all I got.
This is going to get listened to by 49er fans. I like when you do this, though. I like when you like let's have the conversation go in an interesting way.
I see a lot of defensive linemen on this list.
What you keep? John Lynch is going to keep going. We're going defensive line. I don't care what you say, Chris Forrester. We're going defensive line. It's just like Kocarek, just gets everybody in a headlock and just runs that room. What the hell? They are unbelievable with the defensive linemen. Now, I do understand. I think Shannon is like, that's a talent position. Like, there are certain coaching positions and talent positions, and they really believe defensive line is you get the talent there. That's how you win. And they got Kocarek too, but that's how you win with talent. There's a huge drop off between the best talented defensive lineman, no matter his coaching, and a middle level defensive lineman, no matter how you coach him. I do believe they think that, but maybe offensive line, they don't think that. They think you can coach guys up. You just get they're not coached well in college. So you just get your hands on them and you can upgrade a middling college tackle and make him good. But you still like Trent Williams. I mean, they've gotten a ton out of him. Aaron Banks has, they've invested a second round pick in him. Didn't play his rookie year, but he's a good player now, right? He's a quality player that I hear about other teams might be looking at as a free agent when he's up, in a couple of years. So, or I guess in a year, right? He's got one more year, whatever. But I just think that is a position that when you have tackles on the board, that you go get them. You go get a guy you like, and then you just go, okay, we're comfortable. Because forget about right tackle. What are they going to do at left tackle when Trent's retired? Like, that's, you have to plan for that. You're not going to be able to trade for Trent Williams 2.0. Like, that doesn't happen unless they got some way to get Tristan Wirfs. This seems pretty interesting way to do it. And of course, then they'll just shock us by trading up to 10 and getting the best tackle possible, getting Alt from Notre Dame or something. But wow, this is a good conversation, Barros. I'm glad you raised it.
I mean, look at right tackle over the last few years. They spent a top 10 pick on Mike McGlinchey, and they replaced him with a fifth round pick who had gotten cut, who they thought was going to play at guard, in Colton McKivitz. The 49ers don't see an awful lot of difference between those guys in pass protection. I think that they understand that McGlinchey was head and shoulders better than McKivitz as a run blocker. But I mean, when you're talking about top 10 pick versus a fifth rounder, I think you're starting to get towards their philosophy on this. And I think you're right. And there are, like I said, there are some good offensive tackles that are going to be taken on day two and maybe early day three. And, the 49ers philosophy may be that any tackle we bring in, we're going to have to put in a ton of work on this guy. This guy is going to take, a year to be, even serviceable in the lineup. So we might as well do that with a fourth round pick instead of a first round pick. I mean, is that a good philosophy? Is it a bad philosophy? I don't know, but I think that might be part of how they kind of think about that position.
And they should have drafted one in the third round last year, and they would have had him on the roster for a year. So this tackle thing just does mystify me. It really does. Like, again, they did do it with McGlinchey, but they sure as hell weren't going to pay him $16 million a year, which I understand. Like, you're paying McKivitz $3 million, and you're paying McGlinchey $16 million. That's a good savings, right? The difference isn't that. It isn't $13 million. It is that you're getting, as I said, like, you get 60% of the production at 50% of the price, or way less than 50% of the price. Like, that's a value play. But, man, at some point, it's going to be, you're going to need that max talent. I really believe that. We'll see what they do. Plenty to chat about. All right, Barros, you made this one a lively one. Really appreciate that. Let's go. Let's see what John Lynch says. Not next week. It's the week after. And I'm also, we'll talk about this. Like, who does he bring Tariq out there with him? Like, he used to bring Peters out there. I'm very curious about how they play this press conference.
Yeah, I don't know. Tariq has the same title as the other guy, RJ Gillen. So I don't know whether he would bring Tarik into the room. But, you know,
bring both of them.
I think that's a good question. I think that's next Monday, the 22nd.
Yep, a week from this Monday. I will bet they don't bring either one of them, at least the first time. They didn't used to bring Peters out early in the
Peters only did it once, I think. Yeah. You
know, so I don't think they would, but it would be interesting to see if they did. Just kind of someone else, another voice out there, but maybe not this time. All right, Barrels, let's do it again next week. Come up with something good for me to chew on. I appreciate this one. Let's go.